Hello, and welcome to Distillations, weekly extracts from the past, present, and future of chemistry. I'm Robert Hicks. Each week, we bring you stories on all things chemical, from protons to Parmesan. In this week's show, we're talking about molecular gastronomy. We'll learn about the perfect hard-boiled egg and how to make dairy-free chocolate mousse. That's all coming up on today's episode of Distillations. What exactly is molecular gastronomy? It's easy to dismiss it as fancy cooking with gadgets. But food writer Harold McGee has a more accurate description. He calls molecular gastronomy the science of deliciousness. In other words, molecular gastronomes try to incorporate scientific principles and understanding into cooking tasty food. But what happens when a molecular gastronomy experiment goes awry? One solution is to reach into the medicine cabinet for the pink stuff, Pepto-Bismol. This cure-all for stomach woes has been on pharmacy shelves for nearly a century. Its generic name is pink bismuth. Audra Wolf has more in today's Element of the Week.
The element bismuth is surrounded by lead, polonium, arsenic, and antimony on the periodic table. But thankfully, unlike its more dangerous neighbors, it's neither toxic nor radioactive. Bismuth has a beautiful pink luster, and it conducts the least heat of any metal except for mercury. As an alloy, bismuth's low melting temperature makes it perfect for fire detection systems, and in the compound bismuth subsalicylate, it becomes the active ingredient in a common over-the-counter drug, Pepto-Bismol. At the beginning of the 20th century, a doctor first concocted Pepto-Bismol to treat cholera infantum, a disease that causes diarrhea and vomiting in infants and can even kill them. The original formula was called Mixture Cholera Infantum, and it contained bismuth subsalicylate, pepsin, zinc salts, salol, and wintergreen oil. The remedy was so effective that the doctor soon found himself unable to keep up with the demand. He sold his formula to the Norwich Pharmacol Company for mass production. Then, in 1919, Norwich revised the formula, renamed MCI Pepto-Bismol, and began marketing it to adults. Pepto-Bismol soon became the go-to cure for diarrhea, upset stomach, indigestion, heartburn, and nausea. Today, Pepto-Bismol retains its signature pink color and status as a cure-all for all gastrointestinal ills. But Pepto-Bismol has one curious side effect. It can turn your tongue black. This may be alarming, but it's harmless. Black tongue happens when the bismuth separates from the salicylate, and the salicylate reacts with the sulfur found in saliva. The resulting black compound only lasts a short time, and that is a small price to pay for feeling better. And that's it for the Element of the Week. I'm Audra Wolf.
In the kitchen, there are almost as many different ways to make a dish as there are cooks. Some people swear by adding a pinch of salt to their chocolate chip cookies, while others flatly refuse. But what about eggs? There can only be one way to hard-boil an egg, right? Not so. Sarah Reesert explains in this week's installment of Mystery Solved.
In Julia Child's The Way to Cook, making the perfect hard-boiled egg is a five-step process. Place the egg in cold water and bring the water to a boil. Remove it from the heat and let it sit for 17 minutes. Then place it in cold water for 2 minutes. Put it back in boiling water for 10 seconds. And finally, soak it in cold water for another 15 minutes before serving. Molecular gastronomes have a radically different and much simpler approach. Set the oven to 149 degrees Fahrenheit, pop the egg in, wait at least an hour, then take it out. That's it. The timing isn't important. In fact, you can leave the egg overnight as long as the oven stays the same temperature. It may sound crazy, but the science behind it is quite basic. As an egg gets heated, the proteins in the egg white and yolk first unwind, then combine to form a mesh-like salad structure, which is what gives hard-boiled eggs their texture. The different kinds of proteins solidify at different temperatures. Egg white proteins coagulate between 149 and 185 degrees, while the majority of egg yolk proteins set at about 149 degrees. So cooking an egg at 149 degrees makes the yolk firm and keeps the white tender, since cooking at that temperature only coagulates some of the proteins in the egg white. Now imagine an egg heated in 212-degree boiling water. At that temperature, not only do all of the egg proteins solidify, they also form an ever-tightening mesh. That, in turn, squeezes out all of the moisture and results in a rubbery, tough egg. No doubt Julia Child's recipe aimed to control the internal temperature of the egg by repeatedly heating and cooling it, but her method seems a little rudimentary when compared to the simpler, more scientific approach. Mystery solved. I'm Sarah Reesert.
Sarah Reesert works in advancement at CHF. Have comments or questions about something you've heard on our show? Send your thoughts to distillations@chemheritage.org. You're listening to Distillations. I'm Robert Hicks. Traditional chocolate mousse recipes call for ingredients like eggs, heavy cream, and sugar. However, molecular gastronomes across the globe have been experimenting with a new recipe that involves only two ingredients, chocolate and water. The result can be just as rich and sometimes more flavorful than regular mousse, since there's no cream or egg to compete with the taste of chocolate. CHF's Chi Chan and Jennifer D'Anicio gave it a try.
I read an entry on a science blog a while back, and I thought it was fascinating that you could make chocolate mousse without eggs or cream. We're going to start by just using 8 ounces of dark chocolate. For our purposes, we want 60 to 70% cocoa content. 60 to 70% gives it a very intense flavor without overpowering it and making it too intense.
All right, let's get started.
Okay, so we have the chocolate, and for melting purposes, we want to chop it into small cubes. So after we've chopped the chocolate, we're going to combine it with half a cup of water and put it directly over the stove.
I thought you weren't supposed to put chocolate over direct heat or mix it with water.
Well, traditionally, many cooks believe that if you put water into chocolate for the melting procedure, it will make the chocolate very grainy and lumpy. But today, we're going to add a secret technique to it that would make it very light and fluffy for the mousse. What we're doing now is just putting the chocolate into the small saucepan. And to that, I'm going to add half a cup of water.
Okay, and I just pour it on top?
Just pour it right on. Okay, now we turn on the stove and wait for it to melt.
So Chi, do we stir it as the stove is heating up and we're waiting for it to melt, or do we wait till it's all melted and sort of lumped together?
Well, the goal is to have the chocolate and the water fully integrated into one solution, so it would be easier for the process if you just stirred it a little bit.
Ooh, it looks like it's starting to melt. I guess it's been about 3 minutes or so. Is it time to whisk yet?
Well, you want the chocolate to be completely melted and fully mixed with the water. As you can see here, the water is mixed with the chocolate, but not all the chocolate is melted. You would still want it to wait until it's completely melted.
This seems like a really easy process, so I'm kind of curious why people don't use it more often.
Well, traditionally, cooking has more been an art than a science, and the recipes are often handed down from generation to generation, and not a lot of change goes on. So something like chocolate mousse didn't become popular in the American household until the 1960s, but the recipe has long been in French cooking, has been passed down, and so it's always been made with egg and cream. But then molecular gastronomers came around and thought that, why don't we understand why is this turning into mousse and how can we make it without the eggs and the cream? So once they understand that it's just a simple emulsification process, it's not that hard to say, well, instead of using a liquid like cream, we can just use liquid like water. Okay, so I think the chocolate is completely melted now. And what are we gonna do next is put it into a medium mixing bowl and just put that over an ice bath. Just put some ice and water in a container and just let it sit out for a little while and wait for the temperature of the water to go down, and pour the mixture into a medium mixing bowl and put the bowl over the ice bath. Now once the chocolate's in the bowl, we just start whisking.
How long do you need to whisk for?
About 5 minutes. And what the whisking does is that it turns the water molecule into very, very small droplets. And that enables the fat in the chocolate to emulsify with the water and turn it into a mousse consistency.
Is what we are doing right now pretty similar to what you've seen in the YouTube videos?
Yeah, pretty much, except I'm sure they cut out the part where they whisk vigorously for 5 minutes.
Wow.
Spoon and taste it.
It is getting really thick. Tastes like mousse.
Does it really?
Yeah, it really does. You wanna try?
It's very chocolatey.
Mm-hmm.
This is Chi Chan.
And this is Jen Dionisio, doing chemistry in the kitchen.
You can see photos of Jen and Chi's experiment on our website, distillations.chemheritage.org. And that's it for this week's episode of Distillations. Today's quotation comes from Jean-Anthelme Briat-Savarin's 1825 book, The Physiology of Gout. The discovery of a new dish confers more happiness on humanity than the discovery of a new star. Distillations is a presentation of the Chemical Heritage Foundation and is made possible by the generous support of the Richard Lounsbery Foundation. Mia Lobel is our senior producer with help this week from Lissa Rome and Catherine Girardot. Our assistant producer is Victoria Indeviro, and our executive producer is Audra Wolf. Our theme music is composed and performed by Dave Kaufman. Additional music provided from the PodSafe Music Network. Check it out at music.podshow.com. Please tell us what you think about our program and send suggestions for future shows to distillations@chemheritage.org. Until next time, I'm Robert Hicks.